Welcome to the Fabric Podcast. As we come into the winter and start looking toward the end of the year and the holidays under the cloud of this global pandemic, it can feel heavy, like something is dying. Still, death seems to have some interesting overlap with birth. What if this moment could be a signal that something new is being born?
Merry almost Christmas, everyone. Yes, the holiday is coming fast, and I hope you're not just resigned to a watered-down version of what you really enjoy and love about this holiday, but in the midst of all the loss and just plain hard stuff of 2020, you are seen deep within to discover what is truly worth celebrating. What is not just being lost, but what is being born. That's what we're exploring as Fabric as we approach Christmas, this something new that is being born. As I see it, and you'll hear this return to by our guests today, we can look at all the upheaval, the loss, the change going on right now and shake our heads, believing everything is falling apart, or we can pick up the pieces, look for some new ones we've never used before and say, I wonder what we could build. Engaging in imagination, hard work, and hope with one another, transcending what we thought was possible. Last week, we talked about the conceiving part of something new being born, how we discover the new ideas, new possibilities, the new lives around us that could be. Today, we're exploring the next stage, carrying that new thing until it is ready to come out into the world. When I was a first grader at Washington Grade School, our class hatched a dozen or so chickens. We got the fertilized eggs, I have no idea where, in an incubator to hatch them with. I remember being so excited about these little chicks inside their life capsules that we were calling eggs. We had pictures that helped us imagine what they looked like inside their eggs day by day. And I never really thought about what it was going to be like to have a bunch of chickens in our classroom. And quite honestly, I have no idea what did happen to them after they got too big, but it sure was exciting incubating them. Our whole class was so captivated by and focused on attending to these eggs and their incubator. But the truth was, there's very little we could do. I'm sure it wasn't just my responsibility, but that's kind of how I remember it. Being responsible for making sure the incubator was working, which meant the light bulb hadn't gone out, checking the thermometer so it wasn't getting too cold or too hot, never did, and for turning the eggs when we got in the classroom in the morning and again when we left in the evening. Altogether, about a minute's worth of work. Incubation. That's what we're talking about today. That gestation period, the time when we carry an idea, a hope, a dream, a possibility, a need. It's living within us or among us, but not realized, not on its own yet. As life goes, this may be a short period of time, but when you're in it, it sure doesn't feel like it. Long or short, it sure is important, even though there is little you can control. After all, the life of the new thing is already in charge. You're carrying new life within you right now. And we, together as families, communities, a nation, and a planet, are as well. Hopefully, these conversations with a couple of moms, a dad, a gardener, an education social policy person, and a teacher will help you realize and appreciate just what is going on within you. Let's join Kate Clarity, an urban farmer, urban settler here in the Twin Cities, for whom these are not new ideas. So, Kate, you have a lot of gardening, to put it mildly, going on at your house. Tell me a little bit about that. What is it that you're doing over there?
Well, I have my fingers in the soil pretty much every season. Vegetable gardening, perennial gardening. A handful of years ago, started doing straw bale gardening, which I'm pretty sure you're very familiar with as well.
Yes.
And I also have a lot of indoor gardening that I do.
So straw bale gardening, Chris and I do it as well, and I've really enjoyed that. It's just been a great way to garden. But we put out 10 bales typically. I think you do more than that.
I do. This year I scaled back a little and did 28.
Oh, only 28. Last I think I remembered is 60 or something.
Close. Yeah.
You were trying to feed the city of Minneapolis or?
Pretty much, yeah. I do a lot of preserving, so canning and some of the urban homesteading types things. And so I always try to save as much as I can to go through the seasons, go through the winter. And
one of the things that I find interesting is the flurry of activity when we get the bales ready in the spring, when you're getting the soil ready for planting just in the ground and getting the seeds in. We pretty much do mostly small plants, seedlings, and start with that. That's a dream some days to be starting all of our own seeds in the basement under grow lights and so on. But right now we're starting seedlings. But so this flurry of activity, you get the plants started and then you kind of wait. Mm-hmm. And you wait. And I know you know, as I'm looking at my plants, they come with a little tag that says how long until fruit. And it's like 60 days for the early girl and others like 90 days. Our summer is only 2.5 weeks. I mean, come on.
Exactly.
What do you do with all that time?
Yeah. I'm like an anxious parent. Mm-hmm. I'm always out there checking, just making sure that I'm giving everything the right environment to flourish in once it decides it's time for it to show up, whether that be, you know, fertilizing or adding compost to my soil beds or, you know, making sure, watching the weather, making sure if we're not getting enough rain that I'm out there watering, watching the weather and trying to protect them as much as possible, whether it's covering, protecting the seeds from birds or washing away from rain, just doing everything I can to give them the best start that they can have that I have the knowledge and understanding to handle and to prepare for. So,
and even then it doesn't always turn out quite how you wanted.
Nope, doesn't always work. And one of the things I think I love about gardening though is something always works. I try to have a diverse group of plants that I grow from different plant families, and some like it hot, some like it cool, some thrive in drought, some thrive in, you know, more excess water. So I try to have a little bit of everything so that even if it's a bad season for tomatoes, it might be a good season for kale or cabbage or broccoli. Mm-hmm. And I think just kind of being open to the possibilities and understanding that you're not everything is going to do well. I never have a season where everything does well, but I always have a season where something does well.
Right. I think about that in Erin, your little one. So if she isn't just a plant in a garden, but she is your garden, I thought we were raising an artist and we got a scientist. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you start preparing her for everything that she might need for development. But then when you start saying, it's a tomato year, not a broccoli year,
yep,
you lean that way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's fun right now. Our daughter is in kindergarten and watching her, our family has some preconceived notions. You know, your dad's good at this, your mom's good at that. Like it's in it. She's kind of like a little experiment. Which direction is she going to go or what is she going to be interested in? And you know, she'll be six in a few weeks, and watching to see how she's been changing and what things she's gravitating towards and personality wise and all of that. She loves art. So I'm like, oh, she's got all my stuff in her, but then she loves math. I'm like, oh, that's her dad, you know? So I don't know, trying to help her, trying not to box her in, you know, like trying to continue to give her all the opportunities in all the different directions so that she can become who she's meant to be, continuing to provide the resources that we're able to.
Did you think about that, worry about that when you were carrying her?
No. No. She was our little gift. She came 10 years after her brother, and we were not prepared to have her arrive. And my pregnancy wasn't a pretty one. I was very sick, and as you may remember, and I really was just trying to get through the pregnancy and make sure I could do whatever I could to make her the healthiest baby I could, given my circumstances. And And then it was like, okay, we'll figure all the rest out once she's here. You know? Yeah. Trey and I had we had one of those experiences having kids that we don't wish upon anybody. Mm-hmm. It wasn't easy. We had a really, really hard time conceiving Alex, and went through a lot of extra steps with medical assistance to try to conceive him. And we lost a baby before he came along, and then decided that we needed to just take a breather. Mm. And that's when Alex became a being inside mm-hmm. me. So he was a surprise in a way, definitely a gift, and we considered him a bit of a miracle baby. And we were super grateful to have one. And then as time went on, you know, of course, we still hoped for more, but more and more time was going on, and it took 10 more years. And at that point in time, we were like, yeah, I think my cards are kind of old here. I'm going to just trade them in, and we're going to move on with other plans. And then lo and behold, Aaron came along. And so we really feel extremely fortunate with both of our kids. They were both definitely a gift, and we hoped for both of them and yet didn't expect either one of them, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Thank you for sharing that. A lot of people can relate to that. The whole idea of conceiving and bearing a child is a point of great joy for many people and a point of great grief for many people as well. It's one of the sacred parts of life to be sharing in that experience with others. So thank you. I want to break in here because it's important to acknowledge that Kate and Troy aren't the only ones to experience some deep sadness in the midst of something that we get the message is only supposed to be happy. This emphasis on birth and all the togetherness and new possibility around the Christmas season may be bringing a wide range of sorrow and grief to the surface in you. Even more so because of these darker days and this year of isolation and loss related to the pandemic. We want to support you in your loss and have arranged, with the support of a grant from Thrivent, for Patricia Brenneman to lead us in a virtual gathering to explore the sacred territory of grief while honoring and working with the pain of our particular losses without needing to make it all better. Do join us on Thursday, December 17th at 6:30 p.m. Central Time. You can find more information at fabricmpls.com/goodgrief. There's a link on this podcast description and on the episode page. So please join us if those are issues for you. And let's hear a little bit more about what Kate has learned about this caring of that which is new. What else do you have planted in the garden of your life right now that's not, you know, a physical garden plant that you know is there mm-hmm. and you're tending to it, but you know, there's not too much you can do right now.
That's interesting you bring that up. Actually, I was just talking to my husband last night about this, that I've had two things show up in front of me within the last couple of weeks. And one is a horticulture program that I would love to get into, but knowing it's not the right time, because I'm home with our daughter right now and helping her with kindergarten online, and know that realistically that would just be putting too much stress on our family. So I kind of tuck that away as, okay, we'll look into that depending on where we're at with everything next season, next fall. And then there's also a position at the Arboretum. So that is another piece that, you know, the application is due, I think, today. Oh. And something that, again, I looked at the schedule and it's the same times as our daughter is in school. And I thought, it's not the right time. But trusting, just talking to my husband last night about it, I said, I just have to trust that the right opportunity will come along when our life is in a place that I can grasp hold of that and go with it. And, yeah. You know, and we made the choice for me to be home with our kids anyway. And so that's not a huge change. It's a change that I thought was going to happen this fall. You know, our daughter was going to be starting school full time. So I thought I was going to be getting back into something, but I'm also okay with being home with her right now and being there for her, being there for our son. Our family is home together. So in the, you know, in the strains that are going on in the world, having us all together here every day is actually a blessing. Yeah. So my my passions obviously are in plants and horticulture and gardening and
family.
Family. Yeah. Growing. I like growing things, I guess.
That's a good thing. Listening to you talk, I am picturing your home like a womb. And you're in the season right now where I know Troy certainly is actively involved in helping care for that as well. So I'm not trying to discount that at all. But at the same time, your choice to be at home is, once again, you are kind of the mother carrying this family. Yeah. And there are a lot of other important things out there, but right now, caring for what your daughter, what your son may become.
Exactly.
That's the paramount thing. And a lot of it is watching and waiting. There's no exact science to this, not a whole lot you can do.
Right.
But hold them.
Yes. Be there for them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I wonder if we wouldn't all be doing a lot better if we thought about this pandemic period as a gestation period. It's sort of going to be a quiet time. It's not a whole lot we can do. There's some real clear things we can't do. Mm-hmm. And the longer we're in it, the more uncomfortable it becomes. We know we can't do it forever.
Mm-hmm.
But right now we do know what we do need to do.
Yeah. Mm.
Thank you, Kate. It's good to hear from people who have a depth of understanding of these parts of life that I can never have. And turning to people who know this stuff better than I do, one of them is my daughter, Caitlin Sitch. Caitlin has a background in sociology and education policy and in working with domestic abuse victims. And she and her husband, Matt, are busy raising three of Chris and my grandkids, Hannah, Nate, and Eli, out in Rochester, New York, where they're part of the Fabric community in diaspora. She's gotten a dose of the wonder and the reality of carrying something new that
in
is being born.
Dreams you will lose your heartache. Whatever you wish for, you keep. Have faith in your dreams, and someday your rainbow will come smiling. No matter how your heart is grieving, if you keep on believing, the dream that you wish will come true.
So, Caitlin, your third child was born about 9 months ago.
Yes, almost exactly.
And that's how long Eli was in you before he was born. So it's kind of a mirror now.
It is. He has one more week to go and he'll have been in as long as he's been out.
Right. So you have seen how much he's developed from when he was born to now. It's interesting to look backwards and think how much developing he did in those 9 months before he was born.
It's true. Something we actually have been talking about at our house a lot.
So those 9 months before he was born was probably an interesting time for you.
It's always an exciting and scary and overwhelming time. It's one of those things where even though he was very badly wanted and effort was put into having him, it was, I think my first thought was, oh crap, what did have we done? And then it kind of evolved from there. And you always wonder what's going to be, how is it going to change current life, who is this kid going to be? Am I going to survive this again? Will I ever be able to pee normally? I mean, there's a whole lot of different what ifs.
Will I ever get my body back?
What is my body? Where does it end? Where does it start?
I remember you talking about how it seemed to be a race between the child and you about who was going to get your body.
It's true.
And sooner or later, you know, you're left in the dust. I mean, Eli became Eli and was who he was, and it was not about you at all anymore, although completely relying on you.
Yeah, fully reliant, even, I mean, still, but yes, it's all about him, and there is a change. changeover between me being my own autonomous person and having my choices, and then me being a pregnant woman or a vessel, so to speak, that is growing something that is bigger than me and not even really me. And then what is my responsibility and my role to that versus my responsibility and role for myself?
I think that phenomenon of when we are carrying this thing within us that is its own thing, but yet willingly or not, we have it. It's ours mm-hmm. to carry and care for the best we can. It feels like something that happens in a lot of life. It feels to me like this era that we're in as a society is a little bit like that, with this something new is being born. We've been talking about the fact that you can interpret everything as falling apart or as something new being born. I mean, you could have looked at your body and said, this is not good.
It was not good, but it is okay. I'm still standing. I mean, I think it really is. And especially now, as I reflect to with all of the things that are going on in the world, socially and politically and economically, I mean, stuff is changing, and we really are almost gestating it. Like we're growing it, trying to figure out within our family, within our community, within our nation, who are we? Where are we going? And what will that look like? And we don't know, but it's up to us and our personal responsibility to build this thing that's bigger than us. Not just for us, but also for our kids. That is something that really hits home to me almost daily when I think about all the different things that our country is grappling with, is what will this look like for them when this is over, if it's ever over, when this kind of comes out, how will the world be? How do we create the best thing that we can, knowing how little overall control we each have?
Caitlin, you've done a lot of your own work in social education policy and working with domestic abuse victims in Suffolk County and Long Island. And you have talked about in a way that makes me think that both our education system of our youngest, at least, and also these abuse victims really reflect this need to be carried by society so that they can be reborn for what's next for them. Tell me a little bit about that.
It's actually, yeah, no, it's very true. And I think that that's one of the big realizations of the world right now is how much do we expect of our education system? It has come to light, something that I think research and policy educators have known forever, but it's finally becoming more kind of public, is that we expect our schools to raise and grow our children to be decent, smart human beings. And we expect them to do everything with the moral side of it, the academic, the emotional, all of that. And they're not really given the resources to produce, not all of them, the best human beings possible. The side effect that we are finding now is that a lot of kids are at a huge disadvantage. And I think that that's just heartbreaking and unfair and something that as a society we need to do better. So if we expect to have this external place for our kids to grow as human beings, if we are expecting schools to raise them to be competent adults, then we need to provide those resources and the health in order to sustain that.
It's kind of like a second gestation period.
Oh, totally.
I mean, because we want them to be born into this world as functional adults. And the mother's womb, at least in most situations, provides just a perfect environment for doing that. But in the world, then, when we try to prepare children for the second birth, sometimes we give them not quite the same sort of situation to have that all happen. We just kind of want it to happen for us.
Well, and it's interesting because when I had an OB once tell me that the baby is going to take what the baby needs to grow. It doesn't really care what you have left over. It's just going to do what it needs to do to grow the best that it can. And I think with schools, it's almost kind of the reverse of that. They don't have enough to grab onto. Our communities don't have enough to really give it to thrive.
Well, there's sacrifice there, isn't there? I mean, as a society, maybe sometimes we forget the sacrifice part. We'll provide what is convenient. And you as a mother can't dish this responsibility off to someone else. It's clearly it's your responsibility. Mm-hmm. As you said earlier, like it or not, it's up to you. And in society, we kind of say, well, schools, teachers, go do this for us. We don't own it ourselves.
Like we live in Rochester, which has had its own...
Rochester, New York.
Yeah. Which has had its own racial grappling with our racial issues and racial inequity. And my own town itself is a very white, affluent neighborhood community. And it is trying to figure out where it stands and how to move forward. That is something that I am not able to be as much of a part of as I would like. And I try to be just with all of the demands on me at the moment. But at the same time, I can feel it changing and I'm hopeful for it to be changing. I'm really kind of nudging it as best as I can and with every way that I can. I'm not sure what it will look like. I'm not sure how it will evolve. And I feel like that's kind of playing out across the United States is all these communities are trying to figure out where they stand and how they can create a better world for all of its people. For us in our area, I really strongly feel the kind of the undercurrent of change and growth, and it's not pretty. It's kind of shows you the ugly side at times, which is very similar to pregnancy. You get the ugly part, but I'm hoping that it all kind of at the end comes back together and it forms a better tomorrow for us, as cheesy as that sounds.
Last week I told the Mary conceiving yes. story from the Bible. And this week I think about Mary carrying this baby for 9 months. And we don't know much. The Bible doesn't talk about it much, except she goes and visits Elizabeth. And pretty much the only thing she says are these grand verses that have been turned into oratorios of these great claims of what this child will be, which are probably not exactly how it all came out of this young girl's mouth.
I was gonna say, when I think about that, that's not how it goes in my head.
No, but again, forgetting to ask this question, is that really what happened or not? I mean, I just think it's the wrong question. Like, what is being said? And I think what's being said is that life was being turned completely upside down for her. And she probably looked around the world at her time too and said, the world here is being kind of turned upside down right now with what's going on with the Roman Empire and so on. And she chose to say, no, this is going to be the beginning of something new. And I'm claiming a future, as trite or as simplistic as it may sound, I'm choosing a future that will be radically different and where there will be a new kind of peace and a new kind of justice. And I think that's a choice we all can make and all need to take.
Well, and I think it is a choice, both in pregnancy when your life will be changed, your family will be changed, your reality will be changed. Your body will either continue to fall apart or you will be able to build it back up in a new way.
It won't be the same, but...
It will not be the same. If you try to go back to the same, you're going to be sorely disappointed. But it doesn't have to be bad. It can be beautiful and wonderful, and it will be. You just have to make room for it. Just hold on.
And hold on tight. Yeah. Thank you, Caitlin.
Yep.
It's good talking to you. If Christmas is about Jesus being born, and the time before it is about Mary carrying him within her, it seems like this season that we are in right now should be helping us all grasp what it means for us to be bearing the new which will be but isn't quite yet. And while what the Bible tells us about this in Mary's life is both scant and more than a little aggrandized, the vision of what Mary understood this child to represent is worth hearing. Here are a few lines from what is known as Mary's Magnificat from the first chapter of the Gospel according to Luke, this time in English, not Latin. The arm of the Lord, of Yahweh, I am who I am, has shown strength and has scattered the proud in the imaginings of their hearts. I am has brought down the powerful from the thrones and lifted up the lowly. I am who I am has filled the hungry with good things and sent the rich away empty. Wow, that has less a feel of a romantic trip on foot when you're 9 months pregnant to give birth in a cow barn, and more like the dismantling and rebuilding that we could be on the cusp of today. Okay, there's one more person who can help us see this happening in our world. Bill Steinross has some experience with carrying stuff that is waiting to be born, also from the education world, but from the inside, as a public elementary school teacher here in the cities. And also, as you will notice from some of the sounds in the background, the father of Isaac, Eli, and Owen, not to mention husband of Jesse. So, Bill, you teach fourth grade.
And I do.
You are a father.
I am.
So we're talking about this incubation, this gestation, this caring time, which, I mean, the kids you're teaching are way beyond that. I mean, they've been out in the world for 10 years. But at the same time, do you sort of feel like they are kind of in utero again? I mean, we're waiting to launch them into the world, right? And they're not there yet. So somehow we're caring for them. What's it like carrying these fourth graders along?
Fourth grade is very much a transitional time for kids. K through even third grade, they're still building some of those foundational skills of here's how we do school, here's how you read letters, here's how you make numbers and add them together and subtract them. And in fourth grade, we start to take those skills and combine them and find ways that there's synergies and help them analyze and really take that wonder they have about the world and teach them how to learn about it. And so, yes, it's absolutely a time of growth, but it should be in a very nurturing environment. Mm-hmm. And so mm-hmm. in a lot of ways it is like we're, you know, K-12 teachers are carrying those kids. You know, once they graduate high school or leave high school, they're out in the real world. They're treated and expected to be adults. And so it's our job to kind of help them through that transition. And we can't do it. We don't do it. They do the work. We simply, you know, using that metaphor, we carry them.
Seems like you're catching these kids the way you described that in fourth grade on this cusp of being like, it's really fun to be in this nice nurturing environment, but I'm starting to maybe get a little too big for that. Like when they're in high school, like don't put me there because I want to do things my own way. I'm going to figure this out. Don't tell me how to do it. And they're certainly not like that in fourth grade, but that side of them is maybe starting to wake up a little bit. I think about like with pregnancy, it's like it's such a perfect environment inside the mother for a long time, the baby kind of floating around in there. But then gradually this gets really cramped. Like, I'm not ready to leave. I won't survive outside of this, but I don't fit so well anymore.
I absolutely experience that idea, that pushback from those students. And I think we see that in any age. Kids are kind of built to push up against their boundaries and see where they can break through. Mm-hmm. One of the really powerful things, and one of the things that I'm loving about this distance world that we're living in, and I'm excited about what could this look like in the future when people have vaccines and we're all healthy and we can go back and be in person more than we are now, or right now, not at all, is I see my kids really delving into some of the things that they're passionate about. I've got kids who are passionate about writing, and now they have the time. They've written, you know, 8 or 9 chapters, 20 or 30 pages of a book, and they're following YouTubers who talk about how to write books, and they're telling me all these things that they've learned and teaching me as a teacher about ways to talk about writing that I never maybe would have with a fourth grader. I've got kids who are passionate about programming, and they keep coming and sharing with the class programs that they've written because they have the time. Their days are not nearly as scripted as they have been in the past. So if they want to spend an hour and a half working on a program, they spend an hour and a half working on a program. If they want to spend an hour drawing a picture, they spend an hour drawing a picture. And I just have seen some of these creative outlets in particular that my students have just flourish. And I see that as like that hope, that birthing within the rubble that we're living in right now. You know, things fall apart, but that also means that we get to build them back up, and we don't have to build them the same way they are. I'm really excited about what it means for the future. I see that in my school too, where like what we were doing wasn't great. It was failing so many of our kids, particularly our Black and Brown kids, particularly our LGBTQ kids, particularly our kids who are coming from marginalized communities, particularly our special ed kids. All these groups weren't succeeding to the level that they should have been. And so we have this opportunity when we come out on the other side of this pandemic. What does school actually look like? And hopefully we're going to be able to make some real profound changes that radically improve the experiences of our students.
Do you find some of those children from marginalized situations are actually doing better right now? Or are they some of the victims of the inability to be, you know, present physically in a school building with a teacher, et cetera?
Yes. And.
Yeah, both. Okay.
Yes. It's a yes, absolutely. But at the same time, we have stopped treating some of our support staff as, oh, you're going to pull kids out.
Right.
These kids go down the hallway. We have so much more support for some of these kids. My kids get to meet with one person and talk about the work they're doing. Those kids who are struggling, and a lot of those kids are my students of color. I'm blown away by one of my kids will be holding her baby sister through half of our Zoom meetings. She's needed to do that. And she's just developing this amazing ability to be a caregiver and still receive and engage with learning. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, that's going to be an amazing skill that's going to serve you so well to be able to, you know, we talk about how multitasking isn't a great thing, but sometimes you have to.
Yeah.
And here she is in fourth grade developing that as a student. At the same time, my attendance is nearly 100% every single day. I had a student who was down in Florida this weekend, Atlanta this weekend, because she was visiting her grandma, and she joined our class on Monday. In the past, she just wouldn't have been a part of our class.
Yep, not an
option. She would have just missed those 2 days, fallen further behind. And because everything's on website, as opposed to being
get the handout
worksheets or whatever done in class, she's able to do that work that she missed yesterday when she was traveling today. When I look at that and I see that as a possibility for what education could look like and how we could meet our kids' needs where they're at, you know, this idea of meeting kids where they're at as learners, that's the ideal, but we fail so often in our very regimented, go here at 9, go here at 10, you're all the same age, so you're all in the same classroom mentality that we have in a traditional school setting.
Yeah. But, you know, this whole carrying time, this gestation period can be pretty exhausting. One of the things that talking to some of the mothers here is how as the baby grows within you, it will take what it needs from you. I mean, it's programmed to do that. How do you survive that? I mean, year after year after year, these 9-month gestation periods you have with each class, boy, that sounds almost a little too familiar.
I literally have them for what 40 weeks, like,
yeah,
39 weeks. Yeah,
it's three trimesters. Yeah,
three trimesters. Absolutely.
How do you stay alive? How do you know? Like, I'm sure you always feel like I can't. You said this earlier. I can't control the outcome. I mean, it's really up to them. I just sort of create the environment. I provide the womb and make sure the nutrients are going in there, and then it's up to them. I'm sure this feels like I should be doing more preparation. I should be paying attention to that one kid. I should try to whatever.
As a teacher, you're always constantly failing. Mm. There's always a kid that isn't getting what they need in that moment, in that time. It's like anything, though. You can't ever do anything perfectly. You can only do things as best as you can. And I think one of the biggest things that I've learned is allowing myself to just say, I'm done right now. And I'll come back to it later. You know, we do a lot of work around anti-racist action and critical race theory. And one of the tools we talk about is accepting non-closure and how important that is as a teacher. And realizing that, one, you're never going to see change overnight as a teacher. Mm-hmm. It's a gradual process. Same thing with pregnancy. It wasn't like Jessie was instantaneously ready to have the baby. She had to change. It took that whole gestation period to be ready to give birth. You know, you just have to learn how to accept those things that you can't change in that moment and go with the things that you can.
It seems like it'd be really helpful if, as a society, we could look at kind of the mess that things look like right now from this perspective, realizing that there is only so much we can do right now. And it's unreasonable to expect that somehow we could have done the right thing and everything be perfect right now. I feel like we're really not good collectively at sitting with things not being fixed, not being done.
You know, sometimes, particularly as a teacher, carrying might not always be the perfect metaphor, but there are absolutely moments where we have to carry them.
Yeah.
And then set them down again and let them go. Mm-hmm. And then when they fall, we pick them up again.
Yeah.
And so I hope as a teacher that I'm picking them up when they need it. And then again, I'm setting them down when they're ready.
Yeah.
And you know, that's the challenge. That's sometimes the hardest part of teaching is knowing when to let go and knowing when to hold on.
Well, that's good. I thank you, Bill, for carrying the young people, these young souls that you do, and helping them be ready to launch to make our world a better place and just to be able to enjoy their own lives in ways that is meaningful and wonderful for them, too.
I want to thank you, Greg, because the metaphor of carrying really allows me to be reflective and think about teaching in a way that maybe I don't always think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly at this time, I'm a very technical person. How am I going to make this happen?
Yeah.
And it's nice to step back and go, well, why am I making this happen?
Yeah.
Well, and so thank you. I appreciate you giving me this opportunity to talk about something I'm passionate about and love.
Good.
Thank you.
Our hope, as you continue through this pandemic and social, political, and probably personal change gestation period, which Christmas is sitting right in the middle of, our hope is that you too take time to reflect, rethink, and realize what could be. Like Bill said, we can only do in this moment what we can do in this moment. And this isn't the last moment, and you aren't alone working on it. Hey, even in the creation story, it took God 6 days to put it all together. And from the way that, let's call it a poem, was written, it sounds as though God was making it up as God went, figuring out what was missing and what would make it fuller, more whole, complete. And after 6 days of that, God was pooped and needed a rest. You're not God, so take 2 days off, okay? And if you don't, if you beat yourself up for what you haven't finished yet, if you forget that carrying this new thing takes time, or believe that it always ought to be pretty, or if you think you have to do it alone, you are likely to buy the "it's a mess, things are falling apart" version rather than the "something new is being born" version. Don't. Something new is being born.
It's worth keeping this conversation going. Share this podcast with a friend and find discussion resources at fabricmpls.com. You can also go to our contact page or reach out on social media to share your feedback and experiences, because Fabric isn't an organization sharing novel ideas. It's a community of people becoming more deeply woven. Thanks for being part of it.